That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. I'm Gabriel, aka That Money Guy, and you are listening live on FUBAR Radio to the number one show, according to my own rankings, when it comes to making you better with your money. That's right, we are topping my own personal charts. Biased? Probably, maybe, I think so. Anyway, for those of you that are new here, there are some of you that are new here. We don't just have regular listeners every single week. Let me explain a little bit about what's going to be going on over the next hour or so. So essentially, if I could summarize it in one key sentence, my goal is to take you from probably not being great with money because it's never been taught to you in any, you know, formal setting whatsoever, to being absolutely world-class brilliant with your finances. Obviously, this is only going to be one show, so my goal is just to make you a little bit better this week, but you're going to keep coming back week after week after week, and eventually we're going to turn you from, you know, beginner to complete professional when it comes to personal finance. I do that in a few ways. Obviously, we talk a lot of personal finance, answer some of your questions, I give you tips and little bits of nuggets and advice. But we also discuss the economy. I know you're going to say, boring, let me log off straight away. No, we only pick up on the things from the economy that actually affect your back pocket. So the news that you need to know, not the news that is kind of always feels like it's really depressing. Sometimes personal finance news is really depressing as well. And then we also bring in two incredible guests every single week to find about their journey, their personal finances, and their relationship with money. And coming up this week, we have two really cool guests. We've got Sally Winter, the founder of Muhu Spirit. So I believe, I'm not going to give too much away, that she started that company with around £1,000 and then made a seven-figure exit. For those of you that aren't aware, seven figures, we're talking millions of pounds. And then Stuart McFadden, the co-founder of Refundee. So if you've ever been victim of a scam, or if you ever are someone that wants to avoid scams, in other words, you are part of every single person in the entire world, unless you're the scammer themselves, I guess, but scammers probably also don't want to be scammed. These are the guys that know everything about it and fight those scams. Anyway, let me push that a little bit later in the show, because like I said a second ago, we start off with the economy. We talk about what's going on and what a week we've had in personal finance terms. So for those of you who don't know, the biggest thing that's been happening every single month for us personal finance nerds is we wait for the Bank of England to announce what's happening to the interest rates. And for about a year now, it's 5.25%. Next one, we're going to hold it at 5.25%. And the next one, we're going to hold it at 5.25%. Well, no longer. I can gladly announce that on the 1st of August 2024, the Bank of England voted by 5-4, so it was very tight, to lower the interest rate from 5.25% to 5%. I know, like, round of applause, woohoo. If I had one of those poppers right now, I would be using it. I probably should have brought one in for this week because that is quite the achievement. Interest rates are dropping. That is huge news, by the way. For those of you that think that interest rates are really boring and, you know, can't be bothered or don't really know how they affect them, this is big. And I will explain to you why it's big. But let me firstly give you some context to the numbers because that's really important. So since August last year, interest rates have been held at 5.25%. They were raised super high because inflation skyrocketed. I don't know if any of you remember, about 2-3 years ago, inflation was literally at like 11%. Now it is down, inflation back at 2%, which means that the Bank of England were really confident and were happy to finally lower it by 0.25%, 5-4. It was actually the governor, Andrew Bailey, the governor of the Bank of England, whose vote swung it and made it from 5-4. As you can tell, it was 4-4, and then it went 5-4, thanks to his vote. I mean, I don't actually know the order of who votes when, but we'll just say that he was the one that swung the vote. And that is the first drop in interest rates in over 4 years. So if you cast your mind back to pre-pandemic, that was the last time probably around the pandemic or during the pandemic. Where are we now? 2024 divided by four. Yeah, so just after the pandemic started, they were dropping interest rates as well back then. Well, it's happened again for the first time in 4 years. The question that you really should be asking me right now is, why do I care? Who cares if interest rates have dropped by 5.25% to 5%? And the truth is, if you're a saver or if you're a borrower, or if you're both, this is going to affect you in some way, shape, or form. So let's start with savers, people that are currently saving lots of money. You know, interest rates have actually been really good for the past few years. You've been getting good interest rates, good returns on your money. Well, interest rates are dropping. It's not like, I wouldn't describe it as the worst news in the world, but it's not ideal news because it means that we're starting to move away from those super high interest rates. So yes, probably not the best news if you're a saver. Like right now, I'm getting 5.2% on my money. Probably not for much longer as a lot of those different banks and digital banks start to lower their rates in accordance with the interest rates. But on the flip side, if you're a borrower, and more specifically, if you are probably a mortgage holder, someone that's currently got their mortgage tied to variable rates, someone that's about to come off of a fixed term mortgage in the next 12 months or so, or someone that's kind of got their mortgage rates tied to the base rate of the Bank of England, this should start to be good news for you, start to save you some money. I do have the numbers here. I believe that if you've been tracking the base rate as a mortgage holder, you should be saving on average about £28 a month. And if you're on a variable rate, it's an average saving of £15 a month. And I remember there are 1.6 million homeowners on fixed rate deals expiring in 2024. So this is the kind of news that you guys probably all wanted. So that's how it affects you, borrowers and savers. Now the question is how does this actually look moving forward? Have we kind of come off the edge of this cliff? Are interest rates about to drop massively? Are we going to be returning to, you know, the good old days 5-10 years ago of 1%, less than 1% interest rates? The answer is no. This probably won't be followed by another drop for a little bit of time. We might see one more before the end of 2024, dropping us to 4.75%. But your guess is as good as mine as to if that's actually going to happen. This is just going to probably be a bit of a tester to see what actually happens, how the country or the nation reacts to this drop, and then we can kind of move on from there. But hopefully it does start to head us in the direction we wanted to go, where, you know, cost of living crisis kind of over, inflation kind of settled back down, even though they actually predict it might rise a little bit towards the end of the year, but nothing crazy, hopefully. Nothing like the 10-11% we saw a few years ago. And eventually that should mean that interest rates might start to drop around towards that like 3-4% level. So yeah, two thumbs up from me. The number one question that I actually get at the moment when it comes to interest rates is people who are first-time buyers interested in starting to get onto the property ladder, and they say, okay, does this mean that I should buy my property right now, or should I keep holding and waiting out for interest rates to drop even lower, because then, you know, my monthly repayments are going to start to be a little bit lower. It's like you're trying to ask me to read like a crystal ball right now. But the truth is, if you are a first-time buyer, this is both good and bad news, okay? It's good news because interest rates lower, mortgage rates therefore lower, and therefore your monthly expenses / your monthly repayments should be lower. The bad news is as interest rates start to drop, more people start to have kind of that purchasing power to get onto the property ladder. And what you're going to find is the housing market is going to become more competitive again. So just because your monthly repayments are going to be less, the price that you buy a property at might start to be pushed back up. And now we haven't seen a big housing market crash, to be honest, over the past few years since mortgage rates went crazy high relative to the past decade. So what that does kind of mean is that the competition's back, and what you might now be saving in your mortgage rate monthly repayment, you might lose out on the actual price of the property. So my answer to you first-time buyers is, if you are in the position where you're ready to buy and you found the property that you can afford and the monthly repayments are sensible and you've got the deposit all put together, just go for it. Yeah, no more waiting around, please. Nothing crazy, hopefully, is going to happen. I mean, I probably shouldn't. Don't hold me to that. But yeah, that's my answer for you right now. And economy story number two is, unfortunately, energy customers. I love how I say energy customers as if like there's just like I'm speaking to a specific group of people, and it's not like everyone is an energy customer. We all need heating. We all need hot water. Unfortunately, you're going to have to wait longer for cheaper deals. So Ofgem have decided to keep a ban on firms undercutting one another when it comes to acquiring new customers off of each other. So like, how do I explain this best? I'll just be general. Okay, I'm a customer. I belong to company A. Company B want me. They're going to offer me a really good deal to leave company A and move to company B. This has actually been banned. Not all round. But if company B aren't giving that same offering to their existing client base, they can't also use it to get people from company A to come move over to them. People thought that this ban was going to end in October this year, but Ofgem have announced that it will carry on until March next year, the end of March next year, at the very least. This is a bit annoying because I believe that this rule was basically brought into play because of the crazy energy situation we've been in over the past few years, you know, with Russia and with COVID and all that kind of stuff, when energy prices were absolutely going through the roof. They kind of brought this in to make sure that kind of existing customers had some stability within their company. But now what it kind of does is it just brings no competition to the market. And whilst theoretically it kind of sounds like the moral right thing to do, that energy companies can't offer better rates to new customers compared to their current customers, I feel like we're in a unique position where energy companies should be doing everything they can to offer as low prices as they can to anyone, because energy prices are just ridiculous. Okay, they're not as ridiculous as they used to be. But I mean, energy bills, let's see, currently are still £1,568 a year for the typical home. And you're getting no incentive back into the market to offer cheaper deals to other people. So basically what this means is that energy prices, you're not going to be able to kind of move companies to get cheaper rates, which is what people traditionally do in every other sector of their life when it comes to, you know, car insurance, phone bills. I mean, literally anything. You just utilize competition to try and get a better price. And it's going to carry on until March 2025. I think the general consensus is right now this isn't the right thing to be doing. But it is what it is. It is what it is. I feel like probably not like one of the most appropriate things to say on a radio channel, but it is what it is. And the last thing I want to bring you is Revolut. Well, they got over 9 million customers in the UK. So in other words, there's kind of like a 1 in 6 chance that I'm talking to you right now as a Revolut customer. They have now, I believe they've been regulated to some level by the UK government. Well done, Revolut, finally. Yeah, that's right. Revolut weren't regulated for a very long time as a digital bank. I believe they now have some level of regulation. And secondly, they have introduced cash deposits. I was actually confused. I was like, what? Cash deposits are still a thing? But basically, you can now go to one of their locations that they can tell you which shops are part of the cash deposit scheme. You can, you know, hand cash to that shop and they will deposit the money digitally into your Revolut bank. Pretty cool. I mean, these digital banks are constantly just trying to add, you know, more bells and whistles to their thing. And apparently this was something that was in demand. So well done, Revolut. And I suppose there is a high chance that you are someone that is affected by that. So if you want to go try out a new cash deposit, go check out your Revolut app, because that is something you can now do. Anyway, that is all for the news. And stick around, because after this, I'm being joined by the founder of Moohoo CBD Spirit, Sally Winter.
Fubar Radio. Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral, and there was nothing substantive on it. So to be honest, it kind of pissed me off because I thought it was a throwaway comment made for social media as opposed to actually giving voters information they need when they enter the voting booth.
Totally agree. And I also found the whole, I think he said something about Keir Starmer's strings being pulled by senior members of the Labour Party. I found that slightly conspiratorial.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Girls got to choose which guy to bring, or
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they went away from all of the other islanders, and that's where Joey and Grace were hooking up mad. And I've seen the headlines the next day. Apparently, producers had to really cut out loads of their saucy antics.
You reckon the train was going in the tunnel?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Oh yeah.
There was no train strike that night.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
What's kind of that one golden thing that you like to share with people who are trying to start a business?
That's a really easy one, because I have a mantra which, you know, I say to young people all the time, and they really get it when I say it. And it goes like, don't undermine who you are by comparing yourself with someone else. It's because we are all different. Why each of us is special.
What the Hell with Gabby Allen.
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah,
strong.
No, that's, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be like. They see like the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be like this, like serious, like fuck boy, like lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me, and I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Have you had any failures with your money?
Spent money on a designer handbag and literally that designer got cancelled maybe like a week or two after, so it's in my house and I've never worn it out.
That's really sad, but that could be like a unique masterpiece, right? That is one of a kind. They don't make it anymore, so you can
No, they still make it, but I just don't... Maybe the time of cancellation is probably past now, but at that time, I remember what I just bought it. I said to my sister, I was like, can I wear this out? She's like, hola, how are you? No.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
FUBAR Radio.
Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral. And there was...
Hello and welcome back to That Money Show. Quick recap. I'm Gabriel. I like to go by the alias, That Money Guy. Therefore, we called this That Money Show. And for the one person that just asked watching live stream as to what we talk about on That Money Show, the answer is we talk about fashion. We talk about all of the lit, and obviously we talk about money. I mean, that could be the craziest question I've ever received on social media. And I've been on social media for 3 years, so that was pretty nuts. Anyway, I am being joined now by the incredible Sally Winter, who is the founder of Muhu CBD Spirit. And this is a journey and a story that you are really going to want to hear. So, enough talking from me. Sally, welcome to the studio. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
It's absolutely great to have you. I kind of hyped up your story a little bit, but obviously I'm probably not the best person to tell it. You obviously are. But I want to go back to kind of pre-entrepreneur and the pre-kind of business version of yourself. So what was going on before that ultimately made you decide, you know what, I don't want to go typical 9 to 5, you know, business route, getting a normal job. I actually want to see if I can build something myself.
I mean, it's always easy, I think, like once you're down the line in life a little bit, when you reflect. I mean, they say that you live life going forwards, but you experience it backwards. So definitely, like, looking back, I'd probably see more kind of moments in my earlier life where I thought, oh, okay, I can see why I ended up where I am. But I definitely wasn't that kid, you know, selling sweets in the playground, and I didn't have parents that were entrepreneurs or anything like that. So it was very much a discovery piece. But I think I was just personality-wise always very independent, always very opinionated growing up. And I think wanting my freedom and just being aware very early on, like, that there is this whole structure to kind of life and the way that society is set up with capitalism and stuff, where you are having to work, you know, to live essentially, and then retire and only be able to really have freedom kind of towards the end of your life, which just didn't appeal to me. So I guess I started off freelancing. I was freelancing out of uni, working as a kind of writer and in some media companies, learning the ropes to produce kind of small films and stuff for corporates. And immediately was like, okay, I've started off freelance. I definitely want to continue this. And just started to see people doing businesses and was like, oh, okay, what's this about? And, you know, starting to get those ideas and the brain started ticking over. And it's a gradual process, basically. But yeah, for about a year and a half out of uni when I started the business.
I love one thing you said in particular, which was, I wasn't the typical kid that was selling sweets in the playground. Because I feel like you hear every, like, big entrepreneur's story these days, and they're like, yeah, you know, I knew it was in me from the start because I was selling Kit Kats when I wasn't allowed to in school.
I know, and I'm just like, it's so unrealistic as well, because they're like, I swear it just gets younger and younger. You're like,
I was selling sweets at 4 years old.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, oh, well, I was I was too. You know, I was in the womb selling sweets and just turning tricks, you know? And yeah. I'm like...
Sold my first business at 12, made 100,000, you know? That's classic.
Yeah, exactly, right? And then you just feel so inferior and you're like, is that really what happened, though?
Yeah. And some people think, oh, I don't have that spirit within me because I wasn't doing that as a kid. And the truth is, like, that there is no, like, set spirit that you require to have. It's just having a good idea, implementing it well, believing yourself, sticking at something for a really long period of time and being a little bit risky, I guess. I mean, and none of those equal selling sweets at 17. I don't know about you. Maybe they do. But yeah, obviously you then went on to build this incredible company and eventually exiting it from kind of like a crazy start, small amount that you invested at the start to obviously not such a small amount exiting it at the end. But what were kind of the biggest difficulties you had at the start of that journey? Because I feel like that's where most listeners are that do want to be a bit, you know, side hustlers, entrepreneurs, all that kind of stuff. What they struggle with is to, like, getting something going in the first place. So what were your troubles and how did you get through them?
I think my troubles were twofold. So definitely on the money side of things, I was probably on around 10 or 11 pounds an hour at the time. I was working, you know, quite a few different kind of gigs, and very quickly when I had the idea for the CBD gin, I thought, wow, amazing. I started to kind of look into it, and very quickly there were associated costs with that, which were immediately high. For example, I reached out on a Facebook group where for food and drink owners, and I was like, hi guys, I need a label designed. Like, I don't know much about this, but I need like a graphic designer or a company, you know, an agency. And I had loads of people reach out, as you do, if anyone's ever like put something out there for like artwork or logo design. I did it yesterday for some UX designers for the tech company I'm currently working on, and I received 50 outreach phone calls, DMs all over different platforms. But yeah, no, a couple of the things that came back, 15-20 grand. And I think that's the first time I was like, wait, what? Like, people pay that much to have like a label designed. I mean, not that I had any benchmark, but I was like, oh, okay, well, that's definitely not going to be able to happen. But actually, even like going with, I remember meeting with a kind of junior freelance graphic designer, and her day rate was like 250. And I was like, well, how long will it take to get the label design done? And she was like, well, I'm not really sure. It could be like 3 to 5 days. And even that was like an immediate no. So
yeah.
I had to be really, really resourceful for the money side. I ended up using a company called 99 Designs. You can run a contest on there, which I found really great. And you get loads of submissions and you kind of attach. There's like a bronze, silver and gold package. Mm-hmm. So you go with whatever kind of tier you can afford. I think they start from like 250 and they go up to like 1,000 or 800. And if you immediately get like 60, 70 designers from around the world just knocking up something really quickly and putting forward a proposition. And then you get to choose. But if you don't see anything you like, you can end the competition and the money comes back onto your card. So there was that safety thing there as well, because I think growing up having so little, I was like, so like, not only did I not have many funds, but spending any money, like every pound was terrifying for me. So I wanted that like, that risk to be mitigated a bit.
Yeah.
So that service was like a game changer for me in terms of that. And then on the other side of things, I think something that everyone will associate really with is your mental blocks, right? It's getting started. It's telling people about it. Every part of that process was very, very terrifying for me, building up the confidence to put yourself out there and tell people what you want to do and try and get that support and help. And yeah, every bit of it was insanely scary, but I think I just had this grit inside where I hated feeling, and still to this day I hate feeling awkward and anxious and scared, and so it's that hatred of that feeling that kind of drives me on.
I love all of that. I suppose, I mean, though, you could probably look back at you like the version of you today versus the version of you then, and you could probably find things so easy now that back then were the biggest headache for you, like probably like even like vocalizing what you were doing, telling your friends and family. I mean, I remember this when I was starting building a personal brand, and it's like so hard. Whereas now you're just so proud of it that it just like flows out of your mouth and you tell anyone and everyone around there. And it's just about, so is that repetition, that consistency, building so many muscles that just, like you said, they just require you being uncomfortable, doing it enough times until eventually you get good at it and it becomes part of your norm. I hope.
Yeah, 100%. It's so true. And, you know, that's what they say about life, right? We suffer far more in our imagination than we do in reality. And that's true of anything. Like, it's thinking about it that's the scary bit. When you're doing it, I'm not saying it's not scary, but actually once you get over it, you're like, oh, okay, I've done that. And once your brain knows you can do it, it just becomes a bit more feasible and less daunting. Yeah. So yeah, 100%. I mean, at the beginning, I still remember moments like picking up the phone and like ringing a wholesaler to see if they stopped my gin. And I cannot tell you how many hours I psyched myself up to make that call and how like I was shaking on the phone. So yeah, it's definitely a personal journey that you go on, I think, and you build, and it takes time. And I think it's hard not to, when you're very ambitious. The thing I struggled with, I think, was I had these crazy dreams of, oh, it's going to be a big global brand and all of this. But because I was thinking so far ahead and so obsessed with where I wanted to get to, it instantly became even more daunting and sort of pressure on myself to get there without, like, you don't need to do that. That kind of fucks you up with that mindset. You kind of just need to think, look, I just need to set myself a realistic target and just think about the steps in between. And then I won't get overwhelmed by the giant thing that I want to get to long term, right?
Oh my God. I mean, you've preached so much wisdom there. So I hope people were writing notes aggressively whilst you were talking. So that's the kind of the hard start, the beginning. At what point did you realize that you were onto something here and this was actually becoming a really successful business?
So, it was a very unusual journey that I had because everything happened very, very fast. I think when I started out, I had a very rough idea in my head of a few sort of assumptions, I guess you could say. So I'd seen the CBD market kind of, you know, getting quite hot, a lot of kind of articles coming out. I remember seeing something saying CBD is going to be the next avocado on toast. and I was like, that's interesting because it's kind of this cultural movement. It's like a big thing. And also I could see all these articles about there's so many uses for it, you know, anxiety and all this and a wider kind of more serious, you know, kind of to treat more serious illnesses as well. And there was just a wide spectrum appeal for it. And I could see it was taking off in the US. So I was like, okay, CBD, amazing. I've also been into kind of cycling and I was working out a lot of the time. So I was like, I could see the use for kind of as an anti-inflammatory as well. So I ordered some and I was like, okay, this is interesting. I could do something in space. Didn't know what. I ordered some and actually used, you know, the CBD oil. And immediately I could see some issues with it. One of the big ones was it tasted really bad. It was like quite bitter and earthy. I'm sure anyone that knows, I'm sure they've improved the flavor, I think, a lot now, but it was really unpleasant tasting, which is always like people want to be healthy and they want to do good things, but they don't want to have something unpleasant, you know.
No, you've got to make it easy for them.
You want to make it like as nice as a possible experience, right? And the second thing is the whole format of dropping your oil on your tongue was weird. And so I thought, okay, there's two things now. It tastes bad. It's kind of in a weird format. And then there was a stigma around cannabis as a whole, even though CBD is the non-psychoactive part of it. So I was like,
of course,
there's quite a lot wrong here, but there's this overwhelming trend behind it. And there was this assumption that I thought you shouldn't overpower the consumer with too much. For example, it might have the stigma, but then it shouldn't have other things to battle with. But when you overwhelm with like many different things layered up, it becomes quite a big, an easy way to say no for a consumer trying it for the first time.
Yeah, of course.
So I was like, right, I need to get something that British people already love and then combine it with CBD. And I think what I was thinking about as well was working backwards from, I knew I had no money to fund marketing activities. So I was like, how could I get journalists to write about this and get free PR and things like that? And so I was like, well, they love writing about gin. British people already buy gin. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't be that much of a stretch, you know, for someone, oh, I love gin. I love a gin and tonic. Oh, it's gin and tonic with a CBD twist. Well, that's not so far out there, is it? So I still think to this day, never over challenge your customer with too many things at once.
Yeah. It's a balance between simplicity, but also like you still are trying to figure out a way of being outside the box. Feel like every idea is taken out there. But if you can find something that is simple, those are normally the ones that end up skyrocketing and doing great. So you literally did that. Like you said, what do people love? What am I trying to push towards them? Put them together. Well, exactly. I wish it was that easy.
I didn't probably answer your question. I went a little on a tangent there, but that's, I think, all right. There were some really big moments. I mean, that assumption ended up being great. I got some national press in the Evening Standard and the Metro. And so I remember, you know, seeing several thousand pounds worth of orders coming through. And that was a huge thing. And then I had more kind of wholesalers getting interested. And Every step felt huge, you know, because I think that very first sale, even someone buying the gin through the website that I hadn't asked as a friend or family to buy it, felt like a win. And then it kind of scaled from there. I ended up being in Craft Gin Club subscription box, where they kind of they opened up like a special shop for their members, mm-hmm. and they debuted with Muhu, the CBD gin that I launched, and so that felt big. So it was growing traction, but alongside this, so to give you some perspective of timelines, I had the idea in December 2018. I spent around 10 months figuring out all the teething problems, designing the logo, what we call the liquid, so the stuff inside, and finding all the manufacturing partners, all those bits you need to do. There's a lot of licensing as well and alcohol as well. If anyone's ever done it, they'll know that process. And then I launched into the press in September, and then product was in customers' hands by sort of late end of October, beginning of November. And I then had an exit, an opportunity to, the kind of deal that I ended up selling the company through came just in February.
Wow.
That next year. So it was all a matter of months. And the reason I put the distinction as well between September and October, when I launched into the press, but the product wasn't in hand, is because that was one of the craziest, most riskiest strategies I took to actually launch. Because what I found is once I had, you know, the design and the liquid was right and all of this kind of stuff, to manufacture that first run, that was like $3,000 or $4,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I suddenly realized, like, how am I actually going to get to this next bit? I don't have $3,000 or $4,000. I don't have family and friends with money, all of this kind of stuff. So that was a real conundrum. And initially I thought, right, I need to pre-sell the product.
Yeah.
And then I'll use those funds to fund the first production run, which, by the way, if anyone's ever made a product, insanely risky, because so much can go wrong with the first production run.
But it paid off, didn't it? Ended up doing really well. So, I mean, like you said,
I managed to get my costs through and everything. So it was literally the way that I could to reach. But basically there was massive delays and so much stuff went wrong, and the customers ended up receiving it like 6-7 weeks after like they ordered it. So yeah, a lot went wrong, it was all a very quick whirlwind.
That's business for you. I feel like the summary there is that there is an element of risk that you do have to take as a business owner, but it paid off really nicely. I have to say thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. Hugely insightful. There was a lot of gems and wisdom that was in there that you probably don't even realize because you've said it so many times, but I was taking so much there. So I just want to say thank you so much for your time again and joining us today. And remember, guys, go check out Muhu CBD Gin. You're not going to regret it. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Bye now.
Okay.
Well, there you go. How was that for an incredible story from Sally Winter? I do like to now show you, to tell you, money tip of the week. And this is related. So if you've been listening to the entire show so far, you may remember I told you that interest rates did drop, which was good news and it was bad news. But ultimately, the tip that I want to share with you is normally when the Bank of England drop interest rates, most of those really good interest rates that you guys get with your saving accounts also start to drop. So what I would say is if you've been eyeing up a fixed rate deal and that's something that you kind of want to lock in, now might be the time. I'm not going to force you to do it. I'm not going to tell you to do it. But yeah, interest rates are dropping. So normally what happens then is saving rates also drop. Feels less of a tip, more of a hint. Anyway, stick around. Don't worry, guys, because we've got another great guest. We've got Stuart McFadden, the co-founder of Refundee, straight after this to talk all about scams.
FUBAR Radio.
Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral, and there was nothing substantive on it. So to be honest, it kind of pissed me off because I thought it was a throwaway comment made for social media as opposed to actually giving voters information they need when they enter the voting booth.
Totally agree. And I also found the whole, I think he said something about Keir Starmer's strings being pulled by senior members of the Labour Party. I found that slightly conspiratorial.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Girls got to choose which guy to bring, And they went away from all of the other islanders, and that's where Joey and Grace were hooking up mad. And I've seen the headlines the next day. Apparently, producers had to really cut out loads of their saucy antics.
You reckon the train was going in the tunnel?
Oh yeah.
There was no train strike that night.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
What's kind of that one golden thing that you like to share with people who are trying to start a business?
That's a really easy one, because I have a mantra which, you know, I say to young people all the time, and they really get it when I say it. And it goes like, don't undermine who you are by comparing yourself with someone else. It's because we are all different. Why each of us is special.
What the hell with Gabby Allen.
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be like. They see like the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be like this, like serious, like fuck boy, like lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me, and I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Have you had any failures with your money?
Spent money on a designer handbag, and literally that designer got cancelled maybe like a week or two after, so it's in my house and I've never worn it out.
That's really sad, but that could be like a unique masterpiece, right? That is one of a kind. They don't make it anymore, so you can.
Oh no, they still make it, but I just don't. Maybe the time of cancellation is probably past now, but at that time, I remember I just bought it. I said to my sister, I was like, can I wear this out? She's like, Ola, how are you? No.
Making personal finance simpler with Gabriel Nussbaum. This is That Money Show.
Hello and welcome back to That Money Show. For those of you that have just tuned in, I hope most of you stuck around for the entire show. But if you've just turned up, I am That Money Guy. This is That Money Show on FUBAR Radio. Our job is very simple. We try and make you better with your money in some way, shape or form. It's pretty much like our little stamp, our little guarantee with every show that you listen to. And if you are here right now, the way we're going to do that is actually by bringing someone else, so you don't have to listen to my voice the entire time. And we have Stuart McFadden, the co-founder of Refundee, joining me. Stuart, how you doing? Welcome to That Money Show.
I'm good, thank you. Thank you very much for having me on.
Absolute pleasure. Refundee, quite a cool company. I have to say so myself. I wasn't actually too familiar with it, but then I took a look and I went, how is this not like everyone's basic kind of website that needs to be attached into their browser? Because obviously it's a problem that affects all of us. But I'm not gonna dive in too much because people are gonna be a bit confused. Are you happy to explain a bit more about who Refundee are and what they do?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we're relatively new. We've only been around a few years, but essentially what we do is when people have lost money to a scam, we go through their rights with them, and if they want us to, we can represent them and help them try and get their money back. It's pretty much through their bank or through EMIs, either because they should have reimbursed them and they didn't, or because they've kind of failed people in some way, because they are supposed to be on the lookout for signs that their customers are using accounts for financial crime or being scammed. So if they've done something wrong, we can hold them to account, but we also give out free information for people on how to do it themselves if they wish to do so.
Got it. So you're kind of like the Ghostbusters, but for scams. You kind of are going out there.
I mean, no one's ever said that before.
Scambusters. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah.
It's a great little title. Who are you going to call? Literally. And I feel like this kind of topic must be becoming, sadly, more and more relevant as kind of the volume and the tactics that scammers are using on a daily basis just are constantly evolving. It feels like every time we squash one, five more kind of appear out of nowhere. I mean, what is the volume that you guys are seeing, I suppose, not only within kind of your own services, but in terms of the wider market? Is this just a growing problem?
It's a massive problem. It's huge. And you can't really judge it because we only see a certain percentage of what happens, very small percentage. So, you know, that we have competitors that people go to, but a lot of people, you know, there's a lack of confidence once they've been scammed, and a lot of misinformation out there as well. People always think they can do nothing, so a lot of people either don't speak to anybody about it, just take it, or they don't actually know where to get help or don't know what their rights are. You know, for example, we obviously see that banks don't tell people what their rights are when they report it to them, which means people just trust what their bank says and don't bother pursuing it.
Yeah, I feel like this is kind of the sad reality that we live in. So you are seeing scams, I suppose, on an almost daily, pretty much a daily basis now, and trying to fight against them. What's the most typical one that is landing in your inbox?
Oh, I mean, they're so convincing at the moment, but I would say the one that is the most common are cryptocurrency investment scams. And people have probably seen this. You know, they generally start on social media. And you know, what the scammers are very good at, they're very good at jumping on what's the biggest issue at that point in time, or what people are interested in, what's the big thing. And obviously cryptocurrency, I'm convinced that it's made to sound, you know, made to sound very complicated and exclusive, and you know, in a way it kind of puts people off and makes them feel they need to get help from somebody else. So there's a lot of people that are posing as cryptocurrency brokers, and it's amazing the amount of work that goes into it. So you, when you sign up to these, it's not like you just send some money and that's the end of it, it's lost. They'll social engineer you for a long time, and they'll have platforms that you, essentially they'll take your ID and get you a login set up, and you log into your platform. When you send the money, it'll pop up in the platform and it looks like you've made a deposit. They'll tell you about trades they're doing. You have all the stock tickers on the side of your platform. It looks just like a real investment platform. They'll even let you take little bits of money out at the start to help convince you. But it's obviously, as soon as you try and get a large amount of money out, that's when it starts to get difficult and they start to ask for more money to release the funds and things like that. And that is the most common scam that we see at the moment.
Yeah,
because it's so convincing.
I mean, I've got a social media brand and I talk about money on the internet, and the amount of copycat accounts I get, and I get screenshots of the messages into the, like, that they're sending my own followers about, like you mentioned, these cryptocurrency scams. And like, whether I like it or not, people are falling for them. Obviously, I've built a level of trust and reputation with my audience. And because of that, people will listen to these messages, see a message from who they think is me, and kind of reply to it. And I suppose this is one of the biggest ways they're using it. They're using the faces. You're seeing all these kind of AI using famous faces to try and, you know, push scams through. I'd love to. I mean, you probably weren't aware of this when you kind of said you'd do an interview with me. But do you know who the number one face is in the UK for like a celebrity scam?
I mean, the obvious one is Martin Lewis. He's got to be up there.
Ding, ding, ding. That is right at the top of the list. Martin Lewis is the most scammed, not the most scammed. His face is used in the most scams by like an absolute country mile. Like, he's almost doubled second place, which is pretty crazy to think of. And like you said, like, he's probably the most trusted person in the UK. Which explains why he scams. Sorry for quizzing you halfway through an interview. I know that's not what you signed up for. So let's try and like reverse it a little bit. Most scams, I always say, are kind of like obvious. The moment you feel anything is going wrong, I say obvious. Obviously, I'm kind of like downplaying them a little bit because people get scammed out of millions every single day, and like, so they can't be that obvious. But like, the most obvious thing is the moment something doesn't feel right, just stop it. Like, literally stop it and go through the official channels to check, you know, with your bank provider, all this kind of stuff. You call them, put the phone down, go on their website and call them and make sure everything's going right. But aside from that, like, what is the biggest thing, number one, people can do to prevent themselves from being scammed? But number two, what are people's rights after having been scammed, and kind of where's the red line as to, you know, it was their fault versus they actually got scammed and they deserve the money back?
So on the first question, it is very difficult because it's hard to give people advice that they don't need at that point in time. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're not really thinking you're ever going to get scammed, so you don't, like, so it doesn't tend to sink in. But one thing I would always say is just speak to people, because most of the scams involve social engineering, and a lot of people, they get caught up in it because it's just them, and they, you know, they're living in the moment, they're getting all the social engineering pressure, all this kind of stuff. And as soon as you then start speaking to all your friends and things like that about what you're doing, they're out of that circle, and therefore they're much easier to say, hang on a minute, what you're doing is not good. This sounds like a scam. And you know, you should speak to your bank as well. We obviously, you know, we try and get money. I'd love to get money back from the fraudsters, but they're very, very good at laundering money. And it's very difficult to do that, almost impossible. So in terms of people's rights, we're very lucky in the UK that we have quite a few things, and there's more protection coming in the future. if I was going to split it in two ways in terms of what people's rights are, what they can do, it very much depends on how much you sent and how you sent it. But all UK to UK transfers, they're covered by something called the contingent reimbursement model, which is a voluntary code that banks have signed up to, most banks have signed up to, where they're supposed to reimburse you under certain circumstances if you do fall victim to a scam and it's a UK to UK transfer. In October, that is basically being made pretty much mandatory with some exceptions. So people have much stronger protection for payments sent after that time. What we spend most, what most of our cases and what we mostly deal with is looking at banks' financial crime controls and seeing where they should have protected you. So in its most simple form, you know, the cryptocurrency investment scam case, for example, if you are in your, you know, you're in your, our typical case is someone who's perhaps in their 50s, 60s, 70s, even 80s, never really done anything that risky before, and they suddenly start using their HSBC account to send tens of thousands of pounds into a cryptocurrency exchange. If that bank then blocks that, which it should do, should notice something suspicious on its transaction monitoring, they should then speak to that customer and kind of ask enough questions to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
And if they fail to do over either of those two things, we can hold them liable. So if they fail to block transactions they should have, or they do block it and they essentially mess it up when they speak to the customer, you can actually hold them liable for that. But that's something that not many people know. And also you can look on the receiving bank side as well. So, you know, if I, you know, if I have, just sort of say, I mentioned HSBC for no particular reason. They're no, they're no worse than anybody else or anything like that. But you know, if you have a bank account that's being used for fraud, there is a certain point where that bank should have noticed that something suspicious money was being laundered through that, and we can hold them liable in those situations as well. But the process is you essentially complain to the bank or whoever it is and take them to the Financial Ombudsman Service, which is something people can do themselves, and the Ombudsman Service publishes its decisions on its website, so you can have a look at how it deals with such cases.
Got it. And thank you for that really in-depth answer. I threw a lot of questions at you and you handled them very, very professionally. And I do want to kind of stress and emphasize the one you're talking about, the social engineering side, because I've got so many friends that share their scam stories with me. And once they say them out loud, they realize like it was so obvious at the time what was happening to me. But often they'll get you with these, like you mentioned, the social engineering, like the time pressures, like the anxiety they put you under. Even like just this week, I got told a story of a friend of a friend who they were going into a meeting and they got a call from their bank saying, your bank is being hacked right now. You need to move your money straight away into another thing. And they knew all the details. They knew their address. They knew where they were. They like knew their passwords. They somehow also were able to send, you know, that little one-time password text.
Yep.
It came in through the right number and everything. And I can understand why that kind of feels stressful. But the truth is, and I think they've got scammed out of quite a few thousand pounds, which is pretty crazy, just literally like that. But like you mentioned, they took a step out of it and they were like, why is a bank calling me in a rush to like panic? Like a bank has enough security to, if my money's being hacked right now, that's on them. It's sitting in my bank account safely. And most people need to know they've got like FSCS protection, right? So if that money does get with like disappears from their bank account, they will very, very, very much probably be able to get that back, obviously, unless there's anything dodgy going on in that situation there. I mean, are there any specific like case studies like that come to mind, like a really good story where you're like, someone can learn from this in particular?
One thing that there's a very low awareness of is, so that particular scam you talked about there, it's called a safe account scam. I'm not necessarily directly answering the question.
That's all right.
But what a lot of people don't realise is, you know, when you fill in those texts where they pretend to be from Royal Mail or Evri or something like that, and I've almost filled one of them in before because they just catch you when you're expecting a parcel. I don't know, you might just be really tired or something like that. They're so easy to fill in. People think that's the actual scam, but it's not. That's just them fishing for your details, and that's how they get a lot of information about you. And that's, they then follow up with a call from your bank. And they've also got the hook, because what they sometimes do is they say to you, oh, did you fill in a text from one of these parcel things? And at that point, you're like, oh, God, yeah, I'm an idiot. And so at that point, they use that to say that your details have been compromised and you need to take some action. And people just don't realize that those texts are for. That's why they're getting your details, because they're going to follow you up with something a lot more serious later on.
I mean, you very much answered my question there, because there's a case study right there, the Royal Mail one, that I wasn't even thinking of right now. But yeah, I didn't realise that's why they're using it in the first place.
Yeah. And you know, if you bank or have an account with an e-money institution, that they see us weak in terms of its controls, they will target you. I won't name names, but there are some that are have much weaker controls than others, and they know, and the fraudsters know that. They know which places to target. So if you have an account with them and they realise that Fluvio's every text, they're going to be pretty persistent in trying to contact you.
Got that. One last question, a very relevant one, is if someone has fallen prey to one of these scams, how can they reach out to you in terms of obviously taking the first steps to undoing that scam?
So they can reach out. All our details on our website, so it's www.refundy.com. So that's our, that's like refund of two E's at the end. I don't even know how you say
simple.
Refundy. Everyone says it different, whether it's refundy or refundy. But on our website is our details. So people can just get in touch, and we're pretty honest. We don't charge a fee if we don't succeed, but that does also mean we would never take on a case where we don't think it's
got
a
it.
Chance of success. So we are pretty honest with people up front. It does depend on what's happened, whether you can get your money back or not. But the worst thing you can do is not even check. And that's what that is quite a tempting thing for a lot of people to do, given everything they've already been through.
Got it. So give you guys a shout and you'll probably tell them the likelihood there. Well, Thank you very much, Stuart, for your time. Honestly, really appreciate it, and really insightful stuff, because whether we like it or not, we will fall victim to scams, unfortunately, at some point in our life. So better to be prepared beforehand, like you said, before it becomes relevant.
Absolutely.
Cheers.
All right. Thanks, Gabriel. Bye.
Bye now. Well, there you go. How to protect yourself from scams. And if you are in the unfortunate position to be scammed, you know now what to do. I always like to end this show off with answering a few of your questions, whether you've been watching the entire show live or you've been DMing us at That Money Show on Instagram with some of your questions, which some people have, and I guess they get priority because, you know, they've done their homework and answered some questions well in advance. So I'm gonna start off with Connor, who did just get a new job with a high salary. So firstly, well done, Connor. That is always a great achievement. But Connor asks, he says, I'm wondering what the best strategies are for managing this increase in income. Should I focus on saving, investing, or paying off debt first? Connor, firstly, you're probably one of the few people in this country that get an increase in their salary and they're like, what is the best way to manage this increase in money? Rather than thinking like, what's the first thing that I can go and buy? Well done, Connor. That's like two thumbs up, even though I'm just giving you one right now. There you go. Two thumbs up. The first thing you should be doing once you get that increase in income. So I always do say, celebrate that increase in some way, shape or form. Like, you've done well, you've got a raise. So let's say you're earning an extra £1,000 a year. Maybe go out for a nice meal, spend, you know, £25-50 on yourself, because it's good to always celebrate those achievements. And I'm not one of those personal finance people that are forcing you to save every penny you have. You do have to spend some on yourself. But if you can, try and put the majority of that money, like you said, towards a good strategy for, you know, like you mentioned, saving, investing, or paying off debt. That is ultimately how you win at personal finance. So what should you do first? There's a few steps. I like to say your first step is, if you don't have an emergency fund built, go and build your emergency fund, which is essentially 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses that will cover you when shit hits the fan. Emergency fund, it's self-explanatory, right? Step number two is, if you've already got that in play, go and pay off all of your high interest debt. Anything above around 7-8% interest rates, get that out of your life. You don't need it. Student loans, by the way, caveat, they are a little bit different. Those are a bit more of a decisive one. But anything else, car finance, credit cards, pay them off el rapido. Then, if you've done that and you're all good on that front, the next step is kind of looking to do a few clever things with your money so you can start to maximize your pension contributions, especially your pension match scheme at work. After that, you want to look and start your short-term savings and start putting money towards those short-term goals that you have. And then you can start looking at investing in stocks and shares, ISA. But my first answer, yeah, you are paying off debt first. If it's high interest debt, pay that off first. Connor, well done. That is the goal in life, guys. Earn more money, but don't increase your living standards. Put that extra money towards improving your entire financial life and outlook. Well, there we go, Connor. Well done. You were actually the only question that I had time to answer today. But remember to DM us at That Money Show. That's not at AT. That is the at symbol, That Money Show on Instagram, where we will try and answer as many of your questions week after week. But you can also listen to us on any podcasting platform. You can download the FUBAR radio app and actually listen live every single week. So remember, come and find us, come and listen to our show and come and check us out. I do want to say a quick thank you to Sally Winter, the founder of Moohoo Spirit, as well as Stuart McFadden, the co-founder of Refundi, for their time today. And as I said at the start of this show, I'm That Money Guy, this is That Money Show, and our objective was quite simple, to make you better with money. And I hope over the past hour, we've done exactly that. And come back next week, we'll do it all over again.